This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Rock stardom is a hard job, and when it's mixed with idealism and strong personalities, it seems to get harder. In the second of our two-part series on The Clash, rock historian Ed Ward traces the band's decline and fall, which happened as they became superstars.
Clash hit America for the first time in early 1979, touring with Bo Diddley as an opening act. The time was right. Even though American radio still wasn't going near any of the new music, they'd built up an underground reputation which had enabled them to sell 100,000 copies of their first album on import. Despite claiming to be bored with the USA, the excitement visiting here for the first time gave them is obvious in the song Gates of the West, its lyrics a wonderful mishmash of images of America as seen from abroad. It was perfect timing. Rock and roll depends on new blood, and it always emerges from an underground. Although the band wasn't as technically accomplished as their records make them sound, their passion and commitment were obvious from the stage. Back home in Britain, even the rock press, ordinarily very anti-American at that point, forgave them. They spent the summer recording a new album, the fall on another U.S. tour, and in December, they released the new record.
London calling to the faraway towns. Now war is declared. Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust. London calling. See, we ain't got no swing except for the rain and the crunch of pain. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going in. Engines stop running, but I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning.
London Calling was a double album, produced by the legendary British maniac Guy Stevens, its cover echoing Elvis's first album, and maybe just a bit flabby the way double albums can be. It went platinum in the US, though, and even spawned a near-hit single. Vain was an inspiration and almost didn't make it onto the album, which didn't even list it on the cover. By now, The Clash were poised to break through in a way no other British band had save The Police, who were never part of the punk scene. So the question remains, what went wrong? Plenty, apparently. Being in a band is a pressure cooker under the best conditions, and conflicts build up. Money, as another band noted at the time, changes everything. Rock stars develop attitudes. The Clash barricaded themselves in the studio and recorded madly, then came to the record company with a losing proposition. The new album was three discs, but would be sold for a single album price. It was almost 2.5 hours long, but the first single sounded fine.
Bankers too, let's get up and learn those rules. When the man and the crazy chief, one says sun and one says sea, AM and FM and the PM too, turning out that boogaloo. Get you up and I guess you out, but how long can you keep it up? Give me Honda, give me Sonic, so cheap and real phony. Hong Kong dollar, Indian cents, English pounds and Eskimo cans.
The Magnificent Seven showed the band integrating rap and funk elements into their sound, and if the rest of Sandinista had been nearly up to that level, it would have been fine. As it was, though, it soon disintegrated into self-indulgence.
They offered me, the office offered me the shop. Said I better take everything they got. Do you want to make tea at the BBC? Do you want to be, do you really want to be a cop?
Someone's kids singing their old songs? What were they thinking? The album sold, but did anyone listen to it twice? No matter, the band were stars. Touring the U.S. again, they were booked into Bond's Casino in Times Square in June 1981 by a promoter who apparently wasn't paying attention. The gig was oversold and fans rioted in the streets outside. But within the band, drug problems and personality conflicts were the order of the day. They kept wanting to push the limits, but it became apparent that their time was almost up. At least they went out in a blaze of glory. Their last album, Combat Rock, came out in May 1982 and was an elegant swan song helped along by one of the first hits made by MTV. One might ask in retrospect if Rock the Casbah's politics were as sound as those of some of their earlier songs, but it was another track which truly reflected what was going on with the Clash.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease.
Mick Jones was antsy. He had other visions for his talents, and the rest of the band didn't share them. While Combat Rock was going platinum, the band was breaking up. Joe Strummer eventually recruited some younger kids for another Clash, which met with stony indifference, and Mick founded the sprawling Big Audio Dynamite, incorporating hip-hop and reggae into the mix, but with an impossibly expensive stage show. Sometime in 1983, the Clash shuddered to a halt, leaving behind a tale of a band which dared to do it all. They may have failed, but their music still inspires today.
Writer Ed Ward lives in Berlin. The Clash catalog has been remastered and is now available on Epic Records. Coming up, some help in preparing for July 4th grilling. This is Fresh Air.